Hi, this is Ernie Fazio, and this is Earnestly Speaking. And today we're recording on Veterans Day, so if this is listened to at a later date, you understand what the content was when it was being done. We have on the cover of the second section of news.
We got to start over again, don't we?
I wasn't even thinking. Yeah, I'm ready. This time I'm ready. One second. Now I'm ready. The end is near. Hi, this is Ernie Fazio, and the show is Earnestly Speaking. We're on Long Island News Radio, 103.9 FM. And today, if you hear this program, it's going to be after the fact, but it's Veterans Day. And I thought I might say something about that. And we pay great deference to veterans, and we should. However, we should make less of them in the sense that the way we put people out on the battlefield should be by an act of Congress, which is the way it's supposed to be, and it's done constitutionally. Today, these days, we can send people out into war without a declaration of war. And that is a bit outrageous to a person like me who thinks that the founding fathers had a good idea when they said war should be difficult to get into. And so what we do today is we let people go to war. Now, one of the things I was listening to on the radio and on the way to the studio was the injuries to veterans that are not physical injuries, you know, the mental injuries, the kind of thing that lets a man walk around and have his arms, his legs, his ears, and his eyes, but he doesn't have the full capacity of his brain. In other words, we create people who cannot function in society. And that's a terrible thing. And we don't give enough money, provide enough money for that to happen. One of the things that I'd like to see someday is that when you make a declaration of war, you have set aside a certain amount of money on day one. And that money is not something we're going to have to borrow to pay for. It has to be paid up front so that the people who want war can pay for it. In other words, taxes. We should be taxed to the full extent of what that war is going to be cost us. And one of the costs of that war are the injuries and the mental health that we are going to have to repair when these guys come home. That's in addition to housing and education and everything else that we should be doing for them because they did serve. We did this in the Second World War, and we created a generation of people who were highly productive, and they created a middle class as a result of it. But my idea is this. If we put together, say, $1 million for every man you put into the battlefield, then some of those people are going to cost more than $1 million, but some of them are going to cost a lot less. There are fortunate numbers of people who come back after serving their country, and they don't have the great amount of trauma, mental or physical, that others do. So their costs are going to be less. But if we set aside $1 million for every man we put, a man or a woman, we put into the arena, then we probably will have enough to pay for it. But as I said before, we can't let this happen as a matter of, okay, we'll pay for it later, because it never does get paid for later. It's like the war's over. Thanks a lot, fellas. You're screwed. You know, we'll worry about you, and we'll let the charitable organizations take care of you. Now you're a ward of the charitable estate, so to speak, and that ain't right. That's just not fair, and it's not what we should be doing. Okay, enough on that rant. Let's talk about something else. We you know, we have enough to talk about. Nassau County has a tax hike, So why did they have a tax hike? Because they didn't plan for it before. Now, everything should be done in a way that says, we know what the costs are going to be. Now, you never really do know what the costs are, so it's a little unfair to say. But you have an estimate of, and don't make fictitious and overly optimistic projections on how you're going to collect taxes from sales when people's salaries are actually going down. For example, if you have if you're putting a lot of your budget on the projections of sales tax, you have to have money in people's pockets to do that. You don't do that in a recession. In a recession, you lose your shirt. So what happens is they give you an estimate of so many millions of dollars, and then the recession eats up all of that money. And when you have a recession, you also have more expenses. Not only do you not be able to collect the taxes that are, let's say, use taxes or sales taxes, you don't have the money. You don't have the money that you would otherwise collect from, say, property taxes, where people are defaulting on homes. So that's another topic, but it's part of my rant. And I see that we're not going to be arresting people who have a small amount of marijuana. Well, that's a good thing, because in my day, we would have been better off when that happened. Now, I'm a middle-class white guy who smoked dope as much as all the black kids I knew. And I wasn't in as much jeopardy as they were because I had been in a different class to begin with. But the idea that we should arrest anybody for having a little marijuana, not that marijuana is good for you, don't get me wrong. I think marijuana is very bad for you, actually. It loses your memory. It takes away a lot of your initiative. And I've never, and I've talked to my children about that while they were growing up, that they shouldn't be doing it, even though I had done it myself. And because I know what the ill effects are, but it never kills people. And it's, you know, the crime that they make out of it is absurd. It's absolutely absurd. So I like what they're doing in New York City. And they're taking 25 grams, which is almost an ounce. 28 grams is an ounce. It's quite a bit of marijuana, but it's a misdemeanor. You give a guy a ticket, and you know it's and we should be giving tickets out. Court appearances rather than arrests are very expensive. They tie up a cop's time, and many cops I know don't even like doing things that are dumb. They like things, they like a solid arrest. Did you catch somebody who tried to commit a murder? Did you catch somebody that actually held up a bank? These are good, solid arrests that a policeman is proud of. Picking up a guy because he has half an ounce of grass on him, it's got to be one of those down days where you go home and you say, this is what I do for a living. Give me a break. I don't want to do this. I don't want this to be my career. I want my career to mean something. And this sort of thing doesn't mean anything. So God bless the mayor of New York and the commissioner. I think they're doing making a great move here. And let's talk about something else. Fear. We live in a world of fear. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. Life is dangerous. The day you come popping out of the womb, you're in big trouble. Anything can happen to you. You can catch a disease. Your mother could drop you. You know, anything could happen in the world. You are living in danger. And And when you live in a free society, the danger is multiplied. You have 350 million people in a place where most of us move around as we please, doing what we please, until we do something wrong. That's dangerous. But I wouldn't have it any other way. If you do, you don't have the same country. When you have that kind of freedom to do and make mistakes, you eventually do have a lot of people who make mistakes. But anything to control that population is called a police state. And the police state is terrible because it stifles the individual, and the individual cannot perform like he would if he was thinking free. So I want to talk about that a little bit more in my next segment. This is Ernie Fazio, and we're on Long Island News Radio, and the show is Earnestly Speaking. I want to thank you for tuning in. It's 103.9 on your dial. Thanks for listening. I did it my way. Regrets. I've had a few. But yep. Then again, too few to mention. Fazio, and the show is Earnestly Speaking. And I want to thank you for tuning in. We're on 103.9 Long Island News Radio. And in my last segment, I was talking about the danger of living in America. It is a very dangerous place. And I was explaining that when you have all of these people who are pretty much licensed to do anything they want, anytime they want, until they do something wrong, it's the kind of thing that leads to people making big mistakes. In the Soviet Union back in the day, the crime rate in the Soviet Union was a fraction of what it was in the United States. It was almost non-existent. It was compared to what we have in the United States. But who would trade that way of living for the way we have? The danger of being in a free society is worth the price to be in that society. To have someone looking over your shoulder, and all the time, and kind to, you know, mitigating your what you do and what you think and what you say, limits your creativity to a great deal. Now, with the advent of the NSA, with the when we all became frightened about the terrorists that were going to take us apart, well, we turned over our liberties to a bunch of jerks in Washington who haven't the goddamnedest idea of what it is to be free and to be an individual in society. And because they are not in jeopardy of losing their freedom at any time because they run the system. But the rest of us paid a terrible price. And when Snowden came out and talked about how we actually have decreased the amount of freedom in this country by having all of our information so available. If they're listening to this show, they'll probably have a phone call tonight. But the fact of the matter is, I don't care. I'm an old man. I couldn't care less. And somebody has to say it, and it might as well be me. We cannot live in a society that's controlled by the NSA or any of these other meatheads who think they know so much. I'm willing to take my chances in my society. I don't need to have a zero crime rate in my country to make me feel better. One day, we all will die anyway. And there are chances that we take just walking out the door in the morning. So this infuriates me, that the idea that we'll keep these people afraid so we can take more and more of their freedom. And it's not Obama. Obama's part of the problem. It started 20 years ago, and it got worse and worse. And it probably started earlier than that, too. What happens is incrementally they take your liberty, and they learn how to get more under your skin and into your brain and into your finances and into your family. And slowly you become a ward of the state, so to speak. And that sense of freedom, of that sense of adventure, can be diminished. Don't let it happen. I don't let it happen. And the idea that I actually say these things out loud and call them a bunch of phonies makes me feel a little bit better. But the fact of the matter is, they're watching you. They're watching me. And they just haven't found out that we did something wrong yet. And when we express an idea that's a little foreign to them, and, Martin Luther King, when he was out there beating the drum for the rights of his part of the population, they had him wired. They had him intimidated. They tried to intimidate him. He was not intimidated. He was of the kind of man that said, I'll take my chances. And, of course, he paid the price, and he knew that in the first place. He knew that from day one, that some moron was going to try to put him out of existence, and they did. Freedom is very, very, very fragile. It's not something that we can take for granted, and it's something you have to fight for forever. Even Thomas Jefferson said that. It's something that it has to be constantly worked on. You cannot inherit freedom. You can only work for it, support it, and appreciate it. And every day be aware that someone somehow is trying to take away your freedom. So we kind of beat that to subject to death. Let's see what's going on. I can get into that a little bit. The energy situation in this country. You hear these stupid arguments about whether the XL pipeline is a great thing or it's going to make a lot of jobs. It's going to make a few thousand jobs for a few years, and that's good. That's wonderful. But it's not going to solve our problem. Our problems need to be solved by having energy that is literally free. Now, that's done with wind and solar and geothermal. And down in Los Alamos years ago, I interviewed somebody who was a scientist who was working on what they called hot rock geothermal, where they go down into the earth a certain number of feet, and that what they find that is that it's so hot down there, it's like 450 degrees. Well, 450 degrees is enough to boil water twice. It's superheated steam, and superheated steam makes can be used to generate electricity. And what they were doing was they were sending down columns of water into this hot rock and creating steam and using the steam that came off it to run a generator. And I think they were able to produce about 6 megawatts with that small operation they had down there. And that's the kind of thing we can be doing. Now, they did a lot of research on it, and there were a lot of problems, but that's what we're all about in this country, isn't it? We're all about getting things done by experimenting. Many years ago, I had a friend who was a president of Bell Labs, and Bell Labs had so much money they didn't know what to do with it. But what they would do is, when someone came into his office with a scrap of paper and said, "Listen, I'd like to make an experiment with this. I need $500,000. Can I have it?" And he'd just write the requisition, and that man would have $500,000 in his research account, and he would go out and do it. That organization produced lots of innovation. From that Bell Labs, we had developed the fiber optic and the transistor and many, many other things. For a time, I worked for the company as well. I worked for AT&T, not for Bell Labs, but I knew a lot about the labs. And we need to do that again. Today, we're afraid to spend money on research because it doesn't have a stated purpose. Well, when they invented the fiber optic, it was actually an accident. And they found that they would be able to create glass that was so pure that if you had oceans that were that pure, you could look at the bottom of the ocean, in the deepest part of the ocean, and see the bottom. They knew that this was something that could be used, and they had it all figured out way back when. What they didn't have at that time was the ability to pulse billions of pulses per second into a fiber optic. That later changed the usefulness of this product. And that's why fiber optic is such a useful product in our telecommunications today, and all going all over the world in record time and with record capacity. The cables that I was familiar with when I was with the company were huge. These cables can hold millions of times more capacity than those cables that I was used to. This is Ernie Fazio. The show is Earnestly Speaking, and I want to thank you for listening. This is Long Island News Radio 103.9 FM.